You wrote a really good piece this morning that I enjoyed because you did a winner and losers of last night's NBA draft. And I hadn't really thought about it because the draft was really exciting. It was really shocking. There was a moment where I thought that I actually did go down the rigged rabbit hole that you pointed out was for dummies, but I'm sorry, I'm a dummy. And when the Lakers were in that group, I was like, if the Lakers get Zion Williamson, like, shut down the league. Like, this is just not happening. But that the real loser was tanking, because I think that what we saw last night was an example of just how random this is going to be moving forward. And that even the smallest of chances is not really that different from the teams with the best chances. Do you think that this is going to have true league-wide implications on the way that we see things done?
You know, I think that it might down the road. I think there is still going to be sort of the reaction of teams, of coaches, of front offices that when you get to early to mid-January and things are going terribly and it looks like there's no hope, that you're just going to shut down certain players and you're going to allow that sort of losing mindset to come in, just almost out of habit for one thing, and then for the other to say, well, I guess 14% chance is better than 10.5, so we're still going to play for the 14% chance. I think there is still sort of that mindset ingrained in the NBA, and it might take a little while to get out of that. But certainly last night showed that there's really not a whole lot of under the new format now where the top three get the same percentage, and it was only 14% rather than up above 25% like it used to be. Mm-hmm. It's a situation now where there's really no advantage in doing that, in tanking. But I think teams are going to, it'll take a little while for teams to lose that mindset.
Oh, it's definitely interesting. And yesterday was definitely dramatic and interesting. Is it fair, though, Sean? Do you think the way it's set up now is fair?
No, not necessarily. I've never had a problem with tanking. I think the problem was always the Philadelphia possibility of 4 years of tanking, 5 years of tanking. That's what you want to avoid. But for a 1 year sort of, we're bad, let's be really bad, I think fans understand that. And I think fans look to a night like last night with some hope. And if you're, the Suns, the Cavaliers, the Knicks, and you all get pushed down the way you did, then that doesn't really, there's no payoff for having been that bad for the suffering of the previous year.
But isn't that a good thing? Like, why do we care about fairness in this regard? Like, I don't really, Ben, because it's not fair that a player has to go play in a market that they did not choose. Like, it's not. There's a lot of things that aren't fair.
Well, I mean, that's the draft. So, I mean, that's, yeah. Now you're talking about just getting rid of the draft altogether.
Sure.
I mean, if one guy doesn't get that choice, then why do any of them?
But that's what I mean. If we're looking at fairness, then that would be the way to go. To me, this is ideal because you've engaged all of these fan bases that you are losing anyways, that even if you do get to the bottom, that you're basically all in the same crapshoot. And then the other part of it, though, is that, yeah, you do want to, I think this works in terms of de-incentivizing what you just said, which is, the biggest problem that you can have a Philly year that, you go in the tank for 1 year, you decide we're going to fall to the bottom. We're going to have 14% chance. But the next season, like a team like Phoenix, who has now been doing this for God knows how long, that they're like, we can't continue to go with the strategy. Like, we can't come up here and tell our fan base once again that this is our strategy, that we're just trying to plummet to the bottom of the draft because we look like fools. And this is now how you're going to lose your job.
Yeah, no, and certainly there's some validity to what you're saying, but I would just say that on a year-to-year basis, I don't think it's so bad to have a team, accept that this isn't their year and that things are going so badly that they that the best strategy is to lose. I always thought that something was something to prevent what Philadelphia had done would be, you can't have a top five pick 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
So no matter how bad you are in year two, you're getting pick six or something less than that. You could devise a system that way, because that way, if a team really is bad, you just get all the injuries and it just everything goes wrong and you wind up with the number one picks, and then I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to propose to, and we had the problem in hockey where the Edmonton Oilers, they were just winning draft lotteries year after year after year. That seems like a simple fix. You can only win the lottery once every 10 years, or what you just said, the every 5 years thing. That seems pretty simple. So where did that result land as far as the potential for offseason entertainment for you, the Pelicans landing Zion Williamson?
I thought that was fantastic. You know, I mean, because everybody's talking about which team might get him and then be willing to trade him to the Pelicans, and they just cut out the middleman. He's now on the Pelicans. So if you're a team like the Lakers or the Celtics or somebody else that wants to trade for Anthony Davis from the Pelicans, now you've got to tailor your offer around what they're already going to have with Zion Williamson and Jrue Holiday and guys like that. So it really does put a different kind of pressure on the teams that if you want Anthony Davis, you've got to really step up and give them pieces that will not only be pieces they can rebuild with, but pieces they can build with long term around Zion Williamson. I think that really does create some entertainment there.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed in the moment because New Orleans is just such a notoriously horrible fan base, and I don't think that basketball moves the needle in that market. But as a former Seattle Supersonics fan, I've kind of spun this into, don't worry, like you're going to get Zion in a couple of years, so this all worked out well for me, selfishly. This is what's going to happen.
That's rude.
So I'm curious about what you, outside of Kawhi Leonard or Giannis Antetokounmpo, because I think that they are the most intriguing parts of this series, the two blue chip superstars that are going to go head to head in Raptors Bucks. What is your biggest point of curiosity outside of those two?
Well, I think, it's kind of similar for both teams. And that is that the number two is going to be guarding the other number one. So for Milwaukee, their second option really is Chris Middleton. And he's going to spend an awful lot of time on Kawhi Leonard. He did during the regular season. He actually did a pretty good job on Leonard. If you look at the numbers during the regular season, those are all real small sample sizes. So you can't take too much out of it. But, he's done a pretty good job with Leonard over the years. So, Middleton, I think, is going to be the most interesting for Milwaukee because he does have sort of the defensive profile you want against Leonard, where he can he doesn't have quite as much size, but certainly he has the strength to kind of hold up some of his post ups and still recover to the perimeter. Middleton on one end, and certainly, like I say, he's their number two option offensively. And then you've got Pascal Siakam on the other side, where he's going to spend a lot of time guarding Giannis, and they're going to need his scoring, especially after what we saw late in that the series against Philadelphia. He's going to have to really bounce back and be much more effective offensively, and still be able to handle Giannis on the other side. So I think sort of the number two options offensively on both sides also have very, very important roles with what they're going to do defensively.
Yeah, a lot of different permutations as to who could cover two, who could cover who, and how long that lasts, and the different rotations of guys covering the other team's star players. I'm interested, Sean, in what you think this series comes down to. Is it because we got the potential MVP of the league in Giannis against a guy who probably would have been in the conversation in Kawhi if he had played a full season worth of games instead of the 60 that he played? Is it going to come down to a head-to-head matchup between those two and whoever has the better series is going to win, or is it going to be the supporting cast that decides the series?
Yeah, I think it's going to be supporting cast, and I think especially, Toronto should have the advantage. As good as Milwaukee's been looking lately, Toronto should have the advantage in terms of having guys who have some level of experience, not necessarily championship level experience, of course, but have some level of experience and should be able to step up to the stage a little better than some of the guys with Milwaukee. Certainly Kyle Lowry being one, Marc Gasol being another. I think those guys who have been so up and down during the playoffs to this point, they've got to find some consistency in this series, and I think that's where this is going to be decided. I think those guys for Toronto are going to make or break what the Raptors can do here.